I'm glad to be here. It's been, I think, 6 months or more since I received the invitation to come and be with you. And as was mentioned, the church here helps with our support and the work that we do in West Bend. So it was good to hear that you wanted me to come and spend this week with you to preach, but to get to know you better. And I'm looking forward to that. Won't spend too much time with comments now. Maybe later on we can say some more things about those things. But for this morning, what I'd like to do with you is to look at a lesson that involves the subject of the benefits of private prayer. I don't know exactly what is needed here. I've listened some to some of Steve's work and preaching, and I know he does a thorough job, and he teaches on a wide range of subjects, and of course, whenever you go to another place, you don't know exactly what to speak on. I sometimes prefer that subjects be assigned. That takes the burden off of me, because then I speak on it. You say, well, you asked for it. But to choose your own maybe is a little bit more of a challenge. But I wanted to start with this just because it is a lesson that really follows a line of thought and of something that I try to make some emphasis upon personally, but then to speak about it on regular occasion in our public assemblies. And that is the idea of drawing nearer or closer to God, personal closeness to God. Our God is a God who desires to be in close relationship with us and we with Him. He made from one blood every nation of mankind to dwell on the face of the earth, having appointed determined the times of their lives, their appointment, Acts 17, I'm not getting all of it, but that they should seek Him, 24, somewhere in there, though He's not far from each one of us. And so He intends to be a personal God. He desires that. And, of course, that relationship. So this lesson really follows that course to draw us nearer to God. So the early church, as I'm sure you're aware, prayed together. In Acts chapter 2, as they were together in one place, they were devoting themselves, verse 42, continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayer. They devoted themselves to prayer. In the 12th chapter, while Peter was in prison, as you recall, we're told in verse 5, Acts 12:5 says, "So Peter was kept in prison, but prayer for him was being made fervently by the church to God." And there are others. Acts 16 and verse 13, they went down to the river where they thought there would be a place of prayer. So worship and prayer associated with it in assemblies and while we're together was a common practice. It's a common practice among us. It's common to pray together in our homes. At least I assume that, and I hope that's the case, that we pray in our homes as well, not just in the public assemblies. But if you'll turn to Matthew chapter 6, you'll remember that Jesus recommended, instructed concerning private prayer. So we'll read 5 and 6. "When you pray, you are not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners so that they may be seen by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you pray, go into your inner room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Of course, Jesus was not by this precluding public prayers, was he? He wasn't trying to supplant them, that these prayers would take the place of any public prayers. In the context, his instruction, his teaching was to avoid false pretenses in their prayers. But there are advantages to private prayers, personal prayers, that are not easily attained, I think, in public prayers. And that's what I want to talk to you about. In fact, Jesus himself, was in the regular habit of secluding himself for the purpose of prayer. Likely you're aware, but let's look at Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5, verse 16. But Jesus himself would, the inference apparently is, often, so it's italicized in my New American Standard Bible, would often slip away to the wilderness and pray. In the 6th chapter, verse 12, it was at that time that he went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. Mark records it for us, 1 in verse 35, and Matthew in 14 in verse 23. So let's talk about some of the benefits to private prayers. The first thing is that it enhances our spiritual nature. When Paul said, "You are by nature children of wrath," he spoke of the flesh and of the lustful affections, sins of the flesh, the desires of the flesh. On the other hand, we can become more naturally, spiritually inclined if we work at it. You know, some things you work at, you become natural at it. Sometimes people are sort of naturally gifted to sing or things like that, other natural things. And there are others who over time develop skills that's as if they've done that their whole lives or something, it would appear, natural at it. And my desire is to become a natural Christian, that I naturally do some things, and that's my nature, rather than by nature a child of wrath, a child of sin. That's the idea. So when I talk about enhancing our spiritual nature, those things that would draw us to deeper spirituality. So prayer, like other aspects of worship, it enhances our spiritual nature. And just like physical exercise helps us to maintain our bodies, some vitality, diet and things like that, prayer is the exercise of the spirit that enhances our spiritual nature. So the Apostle Paul, when he wrote in 1 Timothy, the 4th chapter, and he talked about bodily discipline or exercise, as we call it, and I need to get some more of that. I spent a week in Alabama eating barbecue. And I used to hear brethren talk about meetings based upon the number of pounds that they would gain. You know, that was a 10-pound meeting or something like that. Well, I know what they mean. So I'll be getting more. I've been doing better with that. And by the way, just along that line, I had a little health issue a little better than a year ago. And I was here once before, and I sent my picture to Steve so he could recognize me at the airport. And then he sent it on to Wally, and Wally hardly recognized me. And that's because I've lost 30 pounds since I was here last. That's not the real reason, is it? I sent him some. I found the most ugly-looking man that I could possibly find a picture of. And I sent that to Steve for facial recognition in the airport when he picked me up. And Charlie's, who am I thinking of? Wally, thank you. He said, I wouldn't have recognized him. He's better looking than he was here the last time. I knew it was going to be a good week. So, 4 and verse 7, that have nothing to do with worldly fables, fit only for old women. On the other hand, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. For bodily discipline is only of little profit, but godliness is profitable in all things, since it holds promise for the present life and also the life to come. So godliness. Godliness has to do with personal piety. We relate to one another. We relate to God. And we relate to God personally. We worship together. We work together. We do lots of things together. But the life of a child of God is one that is first and foremost lived in relationship to God. That seems almost too obvious to say. But to emphasize this, we place great importance upon our assemblies because the Scriptures do, and not forsaking them, that we do things together to provoke or to stir up one another to love and good deeds. We need that. But personal piety is something that we need to work on too, and only we can. Others can encourage us. This lesson hopefully will help us to see one aspect of personal godliness, drawing near to God. But only you can be close to God. You can develop yourself personally and draw near to Him. So, it is my firm persuasion that without consistent prayer, the practice of prayer, especially private prayer, that our spirits will weaken and wither and eventually die. When I get back, I have to have my annual checkup. I hope he gives me a good report. But if you were to ask yourself, how am I doing? We should, shouldn't we? How am I doing? Personally, spiritually, how am I doing? One of the things, one of the points to check would be this. How often do I pray? For what do I pray? Privately, personally. Prayer is vital to sustaining strong spiritual lives. And again, especially private prayer. There is much to be said about public worship, togetherness, and assemblies. But private worship promotes a deep personal closeness with God. And prayer is a vital part of that. So it enhances our spiritual nature. Secondly, it draws us closer to God. James said, draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Well, how do we do that? How do we draw near to God? We're not changing location, are we? You can't. You know, I was in an airplane yesterday, 33,000 feet, somewhere like that. I could be as far away from God as I am here, or I might be here. You don't change location to draw nearer to God. You don't have to go to a mountain, although I do think there's a sense in which, and no offense, but I drove from the airport out to Steve and Pat's house, and I drove through what I call a concrete jungle. It's hard to see God when you're surrounded by the work that man has accomplished. But you get to a mountain, closer to the land, closer to the Lord. I think you can draw nearer to God more easily. But you don't need to change location. Steve said he's not here because it's beautiful. I know why he's here. At least I think I do. So, we can draw near to God. So, closeness. Think about it. Closeness. Intimacy. We use the term so seldom except within the aspect of sexual intimacy. Well, closeness, intimacy is best achieved when we are alone in a quiet place with someone, isn't it? If you're on a date with somebody, you're not married, you go on a date with somebody, or when you did you want a third party along? And now, of course, we have to be careful about such things, our motives and what may happen. Can be dangerous that way in that circumstance, but husband and wife or getting to know someone, you don't necessarily want someone listening in on your conversation. And you get to know each other. So one of the hindrances of public worship in this area is the frequent distractions. Steve was telling me that when he was sick a while back that he sat further back and people got up and used the restroom and all those things. And he had never noticed that before because he sat up front. We had a sister at home. She sat in the back so she could see all of that. She wanted to make sure that she knew, you know, who was doing what and all of those things. And she never would move. She was nearly deaf at the end, wouldn't wear her hearing aids. And I told her, Betty, move up. Move up. Couldn't do it. She'd miss something that went on. Oh, I don't like distractions. I'll just tell you early on, I get in trouble right away. But and it's my wife's mother. I'd love that she was here, and she'd let me tell this because it irritated her too. She'd get out her nail clipper and clip her nails while I was preaching. You ever hear the sound of a clipper in a fairly quiet auditorium? Or how about this? Some of our young men for a while would pop their knuckles during a prayer. And one fellow do it while he was praying publicly. Distraction? I don't like distractions when I'm worshiping. No offense. If there's a baby that cries, no problem. Babies cry. That's what they do. But if adults are causing unnecessary distraction, or our kids, dare I say, it can be a problem for me. So, and then there are other things. When you sing, for instance, you are trying to keep harmony. To the extent that you know how to sing a part, you're singing your part. I don't know how. I just try to sing. But you're thinking about the harmony. If you lead, I lead some. And when you're leading, I beat time, and I try to think about that, and I have to think about trying to get us started on the right key, in the right key. I just soon sit in the pew and sing. But even better, and not to say that that's not, I love that, even better, to sing in my truck. No distractions other than, you know, on the road. But, and when you're praying, when you're leading prayers, brethren, can that be distracting when you've got to think of how to word something and try to be careful about that and then all those other things? And then noises, as I mentioned, and other distractions. How wonderful it is to be unburdened, as it were, from all of that and just to pour out yourself to God in private prayer without any hindrance. Just close the closet door, enter your inner sanctuary of your mind, and address your Father. So, in private prayer, those things do not hinder. It's just you and God. And so Matthew 6 then tells us there's no temptation at all for pretenses in our prayers. When we're in our inner room alone with God, none but He will hear. And then it was Noah that we're told in the 6th chapter in verse 9 that he walked with God. Enoch. Talk about drawing closer to God. What does that mean? He walked with God. Well, for sure it means what John wrote in his epistle. If we walk in the light as He Himself is in the light. God is light. In Him is no darkness at all. We walk in the light. We walk in righteousness. We walk with God. Noah walked with God. But the implication surely includes faithfulness on Noah's part in the observance of God's commandments. He faithfully followed His will. But I cannot help but to think that in their walk together, that Noah spoke with God. Can you imagine walking together? You know, you're walking with a friend, you're walking with your wife or husband, you're walking with someone, and you just walk. You don't talk. Now, maybe that you're mad at each other, and you just are silent. Give them the silent treatment. Well, I'll tell you something. In that silence, you're not very close to each other, even if you're next to one another. Right? It's intentional silence. I'm not talking to you. There may be a mile apart between you if you're sitting next to each other. So drawing near to God is close communion with God. And prayer is an essential part of that. And so how can we be close to God without the intimate conversation of prayer? And then public prayers are not practically suited to addressing our most personal needs. There are some things, in all likelihood, you would not pray about publicly. On the other hand, private prayers allow us pour ourselves out to God. No holds barred. Let's look at Matthew chapter 26. Matthew 26 and verse 36. Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. He said to His disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." Why didn't He take Peter, James, and John all the way into the garden with Him? Or it to the place where He prayed? Do I have a certain answer for that? No. But He said this, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with Me." Maybe He wanted to be alerted. But then you know what happened. He went and prayed and poured His soul to God. So let me say this about that. It's there in those private places of prayer that our most personal battles are engaged, and where God is then solicited for help. And the struggle is often won out there, because in those private expressions and solicitations, there's not only the help that's provided by God, but the full concentration and commitment. A sincere effort is made within prayer to gain the victory over specific temptations. You ever wonder why God wants us to pray to Him? If Jesus said He already knows? Sometimes I need to focus my mind to know more deeply what exactly I need to be thinking about and doing. And it's not a prayer to myself, but it's a prayer within prayer that those thoughts are focused upon the very things that are expressed in our prayers. You pray for help for something. Your mind is concentrated upon that thing. So Jesus, at last, as you know, yielded His will to the will of His Father. And then He went to the cross. And so we can, in those same private places, find the strength to overcome our weaknesses. And then the last thing. Private prayer is especially potent, efficacious, I guess is the word I was looking for, powerful, to keep us from evil. We sing sometimes, yield not to temptation, for yielding is sin. Good song. Reminds us to not yield to temptation. Where's the battle won? I just began reading an old book, Flesh and Spirit. And it talks about the personal battle that we all face. Paul said, the Spirit sets its desires against the flesh and the flesh against the Spirit. Is that Galatians 5:16 or something? Or something. I shouldn't say or something. If that's not it, you'll find it right around there somewhere. Sorry about that. So there's that constant struggle that we face. So when we're tempted, what do? Well, Paul said, flee these things. In some instances, we flee. We must flee, I suppose, in all instances in a way. But prayer. So when we're tempted to do evil, solitude in prayer, especially solitude in prayer, serves as a powerful deterrent to keep us from sin. James chapter 1. For instance, when our thoughts are turned to lust, each one is tempted, verse 14, when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. And then, of course, you know the pathway that is followed either away from or further into the sin, or the temptation that leads to sin. So when lust is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. I won't preach this one, but that's a good sermon subject for those of you who preach. Just pick out where Paul said, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. Do not be deceived. We can be deceived about that. Maybe you preached that one already. But that's, I think, a good sermon topic. Galatians 5 as well, I think. Says it again. And So the best remedy is prayer. So you look at the fourth chapter, beginning verse 1. What is the source of your conflicts and quarrels among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? And so they had these issues of that were problems of quarreling and conflicts and all of that. And the source was their own lust, their pleasures that wage war. So you lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain. You fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. And so that was missing in their lives. And then you ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives. And so they were trying to, you know, ask for things that would carry them further along into their own lusts. That's what they wanted. They weren't interested in serving the Lord. But if you turn that around, friendship with the world is hostility toward God. So you turn that around and friendship with God helps you to see more clearly that the world can be your enemy. And it may be your own lusts that are your enemy. So think about, look at Galatians 5, verse 7, then we'll just notice something else. But Galatians chapter 5, verse 17. Oh, that's it. I think I said 16. Let's read that too. I say to you, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. So back to the things we said earlier, and I'm not going to go back over all that, but how do you walk by the Spirit? How do you enhance your spiritual nature? Well, it's in walking with God. It's in walking in the Spirit. And then he says in verse 17, for the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, for these are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. And so that's what we want to do. How do we overcome that? Again, I suggest that prayer is powerful to help us overcome that, especially in the moment. You know, it used to be, you know, we heard, you know, before you get angry, count to 10. I think about by the time you're angry, then you start counting or something like that. It's like you're already past that. Well, prayer. You start finding that your temperature rise. Maybe your thoughts ought to rise to God. So consider some things that prayer can help us avoid, overcome. Pride. And all of its evil companions. Here's something about pride. You've probably heard this before. I don't know where I picked it up. But as you've probably heard, how is it? The art of origination is forgetting the source? Something like that? So, I should do better with overheads. We don't have PowerPoint and that sort of thing equipped for it. So I don't use it. But I, you know, in justification for that, sometimes maybe rationalization, it's like, I want us to go back to just listening well. No, they work well. But if I were to put it up on the board, you would see it spelled out, and the letter that's right in the middle is I. And so is it when you write sin. And so much pride leads to sin. What happened in Eden and ever since. So prayer can help to take yourself out of the middle, because when you're praying, you're first of all soliciting someone else for help, admitting that you need help. That's an aspect of humility, to simply recognize that I need the help of someone else. God is an expression of humility. Or revenge. I doubt any here in this good state of Texas have any inclination toward revenge. But in case you do, ever, prayer can help. And so many more. I mentioned anger. and those of the hate family that follow. Anger and wrath and malice and slander and abusive speech. That's Paul just listed them all off. That's the hate family. Brother Irvin Lee used to say that. Maybe that name is familiar to you. So, and it's in those private groanings, I think, that Paul makes reference in Romans 8 and verse 26, where we try to escape. We need help, that we have the promise of the Spirit's help. But private prayer then can be instrumental to controlling the sinful desires of the flesh, but at the same time cultivates those virtues of godliness. So it counters it. It doesn't just help to overcome it. It counters it. And we need a positive response to a negative thought, don't we? Not just keep from sin, serve. You know, I think those are important things that we recognize. We just don't quit sinning and do nothing. We avoid sin and we serve God faithfully. So prayer helps us to avoid sin, but it focuses our mind toward godliness, the positive things. And that itself, if you fill it up with good, the cup has no more room for something else, and evil cannot fill it or inhabit it as well. So, a prayer like this: help me to be humble and patient and loving, asking for God's help, but reminding me to be humble, to be patient, to be loving. It's a prayer that naturally follows our requests for help to overcome our desires for the flesh. If pride has caused me to have an attitude I shouldn't have had, then if I want to overcome that, I pray for some help with humility, and that directs my thought to be more humble. Well, you said about 15 after? I can do it in less time than that. I got 3 minutes and I only need two. How about that for a start? Well, private prayers, a prayer has so many benefits, certainly more than I've presented here. And really what I like to do is just say, let this get you started with everything. There isn't time. There is just not time in our assemblies and even in our studies together to cover everything, but more importantly, to cover it personally, because every one of us are at a different stage. Every one of us have different needs. Every one of us is in some way needing prayer for something that is likely different than another. And so all these things are just things that are thoughts that, you know, I try to bring to my prayers. But this maybe will get you started with your own to think about how your prayers should be directed. In what direction should you take your prayers? And I think I can say this, that if you will watch, your life will follow the direction of your prayers. Do you know how important this is? It's that important. But be careful what you pray for, because there are two directions that our lives can go. One is good and the other is not. And they're opposite in direction. And so, you know, you may pray for things and get them, and your life will be taken in that direction, and it won't be good for you. Just a few. My purpose is to point to a few of these things in the hope that it would help you to develop a closer personal relationship with your Father in heaven by spending much time in secret with him. You know, that's the lyric of a song. And then, as we make those private petitions, to benefit directly from the health that's granted to us in the answer to our prayers. The last part of the verse that we read in Matthew, the 6th chapter and verse 6, the last part of that says, "And your Father who sees in secret, who hears, will reward you." Thank you for listening.